නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So today we are going to start a new series. So this is 149th Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya. Actually, Majjhima Nikaya has 151 or 152 suttas, and this is 149. And we already discussed about six sense bases in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, the exposition of the six sense bases. But here also Buddha give another detailed explanation about six sense bases, and it has some connection with the conceptual proliferation. And so if we start the sutta now, thus have I heard. So Venerable Ananda is explaining this sutta to the others during the council. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living in Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied, "the Blessed One said this, 'Bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the great sixfold base. Listen and attend closely to what I say.' 'Yes, Venerable Sir,' the bhikkhus replied, 'the Blessed One said this.'" Now, in this sutta, actually, Buddha first talks about the negative side of how one ignorantly handle six sense bases, and next he going to explain how one need to skillfully handle six sense bases so that the same can be used to expel various defilements, to avoid or remove various defilements. So in that sense, six sense bases are something that we need to be a little care of, because through which actually we are communicating with the outside world. Through the eyes we can see, through the ears we can hear, through the nose we can recognize various smells, odors, and through tongue we can recognize various tastes, and through the body we can recognize various tactile sensations, and through the mind we can cognize various mental objects. So this is what actually even Buddha mentioned as the world. Even though we consider that we have an outside world, we have various galaxies, etc., but ultimately if we closely analyze, so these six sense bases and their corresponding objects are what we can call as the world. And and here Buddha mentioned, because when one does not know and see the I as it actually is, when one does not know and see forms as they actually are, when one does not know and see I consciousness as it actually is, when one does not know and see I contact as it actually is, when one does not know and see as it actually is the feeling felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition, then one is inflamed by lust for the eye, for forms, for eye consciousness. For eye contact, for the feeling felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition. Now here the term is given as does not know. Repeated term is does not know. Chakkum bhikkhave ajanam apassam yathabhutam. Rupe ajanam apassam yathabhutam. Chakku vinyanam ajanam apassam yathabhutam. Chakku sampassam ajanam apassam yathabhutam. So there are few terms here. Ajanam, that means does not know. And the other thing is apassam, does not see. And yathabhutam, that means as they truly are. Now we know that we all have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and again we can see them from the mirror. So probably one can think, okay, this is what it is meant. But there's a more deep meaning here. It is not that we see our eyes, ears, nose by the mirror and we know that they are available And when there is a kind of a pain in our eye or nose, wherever, we can know. So that is not the idea here, but more than that, we have to see them through the kind of instantaneous activity, what's happening in them. So one has to recognize immediately when eye is in action, when ear is in action, when nose is in action, when tongue is in action, when body is in action, when mind is in action. Actually, it's pretty difficult because they happen to like concurrently. It is not that eye happens first and then ear happens and then say nose happens and again then eye happens. Actually, that is the exact way they are happening, exact way in the sense they are happening in a kind of a series, sequentially. But due to their extreme speed, so we can't recognize how they are sequentially happening because of their very rapid happening. So we have the perception that they are happening at the same time. It's very much similar to a present day computer. So suppose you have a very high speed computer, which assume that the CPU is just one CPU, but still very, very higher frequency, many gigahertz. And it has time shared with various other processes. You may have word processing applications, you may have mathematics related applications, you may have some calculative type of applications, you may have some graphics related applications, and you may have system maintenance type of applications, and you may have peripheral devices related applications. So likewise, there may be so many processes which needs to be time shared, the processor time. But since the processor running at a very high speed, and we get the perception that all these different processes, these different applications are happening right now, happening concurrently, happening parallelly. They are activating, or what we call as they are running at the same time. But we know that what has happened is kind of a time sharing, and we simply have a single processor. It has time shared the different kinds of applications, but because of its rapidity, high speed, we can't recognize that. So similarly, in our mind also, some similar situation happens. The mind can swiftly recognize what's really going on, and whenever eye contact happens, so mind can recognize that. When ear contact happens, one can recognize that. When nose contact happens, one can recognize that. So likewise, all these sense bases are happening quickly, and mind and that cognitive process happen very, very quickly. And as a result of that, we have the perception that they are happening concurrently. All are happening at the same time. But if one is capable of, say, switching few of them off, that means shutting down some of them, then one can place some keen attention to what is functioning. So something like that we are trying to do in Vipassana, where we close our eyes so that we are not getting much interaction through our eyes, and we go to a very silent place so that our ears are not that sort of disturbing us. And the environment does not produce changing odors. So it's very much a kind of a pleasant odor is available every time. So it's also not stimulating. Then we are keeping our mouth shut and we are not eating. So tongue is also very much not functioning. And the body is where we are trying to keep on checking. So during the Kaya Anupassana, so we are paying close attention to the body. And in order to do that, we are trying to keep the mind also quiet. As much as possible, thinking is also fairly subsided. And our attention is primarily based on the body. So in a way, we are trying to do some kind of an experiment, taking one sense base at that time. So we are using particularly the body base body sense base and the corresponding tactile sensations, tangibles. So in a way, by doing that, we are now in a situation to carefully recognize what is really going on. And say for example, if we are trying to keep our attention on rising and falling of the abdomen, so eyes are closed, ears are not hearing any particular sound. So likewise, all the other activities are fairly subsided, and we are now trying to keep aware of rising and falling, closely analyzing rising and falling, or closely investigating rising and falling. So there are various minor sensations or minute sensations are happening, even that one would be able to recognize. So likewise, in the meditation process, vipassana process, we are trying to isolate one sense base and trying to understand that. So likewise, when one develops such kind of a skill, particularly by means of the body, then one can slowly even expand it to other sense bases. Say when you are hearing something, so you again you can recognize what's really going on. You are fully aware. Now nothing is heard, but immediately something is heard. So that hearing process, how the hearing process starts. Similarly the seeing process, similarly the sensing process, and even the thinking process. Assume that the mind was not thinking anything, but immediately a thought happens to the mind. Immediately the mind sort of get a kind of a jerk, understood that a particular thought has happened, a feeling has happened, a perception has happened. So likewise, whenever a thought has happened, so mind can recognize that. So likewise, when the mind is having some kind of a skill, particularly the mindfulness, where a fair amount of awakened nature is available, one is not dragged into the past and the future, rather one is fully awake to the present moment. And quickly one's mind can be focused, quickly one's mind can be concentrated. So that is also another necessary skill that one has to have, because say if you want to switch your attention to the tongue, so now you should be able to do that. And if something happens in your ears, again you need to shift your attention back to the ears. Again, if something happens at your eyes, then you have to shift your attention to the eyes. So in a way, we need to have some kind of a situation, a kind of a skill, where one needs to quickly locate one's attention at any place. So this kind of a skill has to be developed. So that is, in a way, we get the some sort of a preliminary type of training during the walking meditation. In walking meditation, there's a very good exercise that we are going through. When the right foot is touching the ground, okay, we need to pay attention there. When left foot is touching the ground, we need to pay attention there. So the place constantly changing, the object constantly changing, but we have to have kind of a skill developed where we need to be able to place our attention quickly to where it is necessary, where it is touching happens. So then, when this skill is developed again and again, so our mind comes to very much like in our control. So we can pay attention to wherever it is necessary, and we can do it quickly. So while doing that, if we are able to understand the function of the eye, function of the ear, function of the nose, function of the tongue, function of the body, function of the mind, and even their corresponding objects. So that means we are now little capable of understanding how things are happening. You understand how these ayatanas, sense bases, are operating. So eye has to do the seeing function, ear has to do the hearing function, nose has to do the smelling function, or tongue has to do the tasting function, body has to do the, say, recognizing or sensing function, mind has to do the cognizing function. So they are particularly special tasks assigned to them. They are not mixing up. I can't hear, ear can't see, then tongue can't hear, tongue can't see, tongue can only taste, recognize taste, and body can't hear, body can't taste, body can't see, body can only recognize various tactile sensations. So they are not mixing up. So actually we can recognize, or we can recall a very interesting sutta. This point is highlighted. So that sutta name is called Unnabha Brahmana Sutta, available in the Indriya Samyutta, where one Brahmin called Unnabha is a very intelligent person. He approached the Buddha and he raised this question. He mentioned that we have particularly five sense bases, eye, ear, nose, tongue and body, and they have their corresponding objects. For the eye, they are the forms. For ear, the sounds. For nose, the odors. For tongue, the taste. And for the body, tactile sensations. And they are not mixing up, as I mentioned. So this Unnabha Brahmana very beautifully mentioned that. So they say they have their particular domain. The domain for the eye is the vision. The domain for the ear is the audible things or hearing. Domain for nose is the smells. So likewise, their corresponding domains are there. So those domains are not mixing up. So they have their kind of a specific task assigned. And he has a very interesting question, and he asks, and whenever they go through this recognition, or they go through this sensing, nothing remains in these senses. When we see something through our eye, so that forms does not retain in the eye. When we hear a particular sound, that sound quickly passes away and nothing retains in the ears. And when we smell something, that particular fragrance or smell does not retain in the nose. And when we recognize certain taste, suppose that we drink some water and everything has gone, nothing retains on the tongue. Body also the same. And then he asks a very beautiful question. Who is going to consume all these? What are all these different objects that we acquire, we perceive, we recognize? So who is going to consume them? And then Buddha answers, that is the mind. Mind is the one ultimately analyzing, recognizing, and further continuing of thinking, proliferating, and all these things, memorizing, all these things are the activities happening in the mind. The other five are merely senses. And the mind itself is at the door level, at the sense base level, it is merely a sensor. But underneath there are so many other functions. So they are responsible for all these other recognitions, likes and dislikes, memorizing and all sorts of different activities. Now, here Buddha mentioned in a way kind of different levels. So we can recognize I. So I is the internal sense base. And the corresponding part is the forms, that is the external sense base. And when these two come together, then the I consciousness happens. So that is in a way the result. But interestingly, I forms and I consciousness happen very very quickly and again repeatedly. When these three happens repeatedly, actually we get the notion that they three are existing, they three are coming together. They are happening together. As a result of that, we get the eye contact. Chakkum paticca rupecha uppajjati chakku vinyanam tinnan sangati passo. So that is how Madhupindika Sutta explains. So the passa, eye contact happens. So when eye contact is available, we get a feeling. Passa paccaya vedana. The feelings are available. And that feeling can be either pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful. So the three types of feelings are possible. Now, as a eye contact as a condition, so these different feelings can happen. Now, Buddha stops at there and then he mentioned if one does not know any of these, if one does not know their conditioned nature, if one does not know their dependent nature, if one doesn't understand so this kind of a some in-depth situation, then one is inflamed by lust for the eye, inflamed by lust for forms, eye consciousness, eye contact, feeling. So that basically means, so we get into some kind of a defiled state of mind because we don't know. We can't see how this process has happened. We can't see their real nature, the conditioned nature, the dependent nature, kind of a, in a way, kind of a sequential nature we can't understand. We are not using wise attention, yoniso manasikara. Instead, we get trapped in the result. So that could be the pleasant, say, sensation or pleasant feeling. And we immediately get attracted to that. We get kind of a desire to that. And we get kind of a craving for that. And ultimately, we are trapped in a kind of a grasping. Now, mind is going through a kind of a situation where mind starts burning with lust, burning with desire, or the opposite, burning with anger. So likewise, now mind is under the situation of a defiled state. Now there Buddha mentioned, when one abides inflamed by lust, fettered, infatuated, contemplating gratification, then five aggregates affected by clinging are built up for oneself in the future. Now that's a very strong statement. Tassa sarattassa sanyuttassa sammulhassa assadanu passino viharato ayatin panchupadana khanda upachayam gacchanti. Now again and again the grasping happens. Suppose that you saw a beautiful form. Suppose you saw a beautiful flower. And immediately you get a pleasant sensation. Immediately you get a pleasant feeling. And you get attracted to that. You start desiring that. And you may even go closer to that. You start smelling that. And you may pluck it even. And you are so attached to that. And you are in love with that flower. And now what happens? So various aggregates are now developing. So you are grasping so many things. Even though this is a very little activity, if we analyze them one by one, so all different kinds of aggregates are in a way in the increased side. The forms aggregate, you get attached, you are grasping to the forms aggregate. The color, the beauty, the shape, etc. And on the other hand, you have the pleasant feeling and you are more attracted to that. You are desiring that pleasant feeling. You are being driven by that pleasant feeling, that sense pressure. So you are trying to gain some satisfaction through that pleasant feeling. So that feeling aggregates is also we are grasping and that grasping is growing. And you have a kind of a pleasant type of recognition. So this is a rose flower and you give a name and you have all the previous conditioning operating in the mind. So as a result of that, you are having all the pleasant memories about that and all different advertisements that you have seen, all are coming and helping that whole process. And you are attached to that various perceptions as well. You are encouraging those perceptions. You are further strengthening those perceptions. And probably now you are going closer to that. You start smelling that closely. You start sort of observing that more closely. So these are all other sankharas. We are intentionally doing various activities now. And those intentions are so further strengthened, further highlighted. So those patterns of the mind are further strengthened. So the sankhara khanda or the formations aggregate are also grasped. And that is also growing. And the eye consciousness happens again and again. And if you start smelling, then even the nose consciousness happens again and again. And you may start thinking, and even probably you want to offer this flower to your fiance, and then you start thinking, imagining, fantasizing. So then the mind consciousness also operating. So likewise, the consciousness aggregate also into the rising side. So five aggregates affected by clinging are built up for oneself in the future. Now you are preparing future causes to exist, and various aggregates are operating, but you are getting attached to them, you get attracted to them, you are acting according to them, and ultimately you are preparing causes for future existence. Various karma are being generated. So sarattassa samyuttassa sammulhassa assadanu passino viharato. Now those few words are very interesting. How we get sarattassa means you have some sort of a desire. So inflamed by lust, then samyuttassa, you get fettered. So your mind is now fettered. Suppose you had a kind of a pleasant mind, a calm mind, relaxed mind, but now no more. Now the mind is fettered. Fettered by anger, fettered by lust, fettered by desire. So likewise, now the mind is fettered. Then sammulhassa, that means you are completely ignorant, infatuated. So you are being driven by the whole situation, but you can't understand. So mind is thinking and you are fairly infatuated in that situation. You are in a kind of a fantasy world, fabricated world, artificial world. And asadanu passino viharato. And more and more you are desiring to have some pleasure. You are thinking about the gratification. That is why you are going towards that. That is why you are smelling that. That is why you are plucking that. That is why you are thinking what you are going to do with that. I'm taking this rose flower as an example. So likewise, whenever we get attached to a particular object, here I have taken a rose flower. So if we are attracted to that, so we start getting attracted to that, holding that, grasping that, thinking about it, and may even making a story about it. So likewise, so many things are getting involved, and we get completely ignorant of what is going to happen, and we are being infatuated on in the situation, and as a result of that, in the other sense, we can say we are accumulating a lot of karma, and panchupadana kanda, the five clinging aggregates are growing. Panchupadana kanda upachayang gacchanti tanha chasa pono bhavika nandiraga sahagata tatra tatrabi nandini sa chasa pavaddhati. So that means the future causes for existence, even for future birth, are now being slowly generated, and we are preparing our future life by getting attached to all these different things, by clinging to different things, by getting attracted to different things, and being born to those different states. And temporarily we may get born to that kind of a sense pleasure, but it makes a significant impact in our mind. Suppose the mind is a very kind of a pure, clean type of sheet. But when we get attracted to this kind of a form, so we are kind of staining the mind. We are making a kind of a scar in the mind. We are putting a kind of a ink in the mind. So mind get colored, mind get conditioned. So that stain start remaining in the mind, and now mind being conditioned, mind being colored, and now we are preparing kind of a mind which is so conditioned, and it may retain, it may continue even into the next life. So likewise, during the operation of our sense bases, and their corresponding external sense bases, if we are ignorant, so we are continuously preparing our future as well. So when one abides inflamed by lust, fettered, infatuated, then contemplating gratification, then five aggregates affected by clinging are built up for oneself in the future. So this is a very strong statement, and one's craving which brings renewal of being is accompanied by delight and lust, and delights in this and that increases. One's bodily and mental troubles increase. One's bodily and mental torments increase. One's bodily and mental fevers increase. And one experiences bodily and mental suffering. And further Buddha adds, Tanha chasya pono bhavika nandiraga sahagata tatra tatra binandini. So these are the qualities of the tanha. Pono bhavika nandiraga sahagata tatra tatra binandini. So these are kind of functions or activities conducted by tanha, craving. Pono bhavika, so it may generate a new state. One can extend it to the new life, but in the present life, it may generate kind of a new state. You are born into a new state. You are dragged into a new state. You are mentally anticipating a new state. Always driven by that sort of an anticipation, a desire. Nandiraga sahagata, and it has kind of a delight, but that delight is colored by lust. When you are having a lustful thought, it has a little pleasure. It has a kind of a delight. But it is colored, conditioned by lust. Nandiraga sahagata. Tatra tatra abhinandini. Wherever such delight is available, you get attracted to that. You get satisfaction through that. You get delight through that. Wherever it happens. Ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, eye. So any different objects, external objects, internal objects, whatever, and you get attracted to that places, those places. Sachasya pavaddati, and that whole situation is now aggravating, now getting developed. Sachasya pavaddati, tasya kaya kaikapi daratha pavaddhanti. Now say for example, say once you get attracted to this rose flower and you are thinking, imagining, and you lose your balance even, and you are now anxious, you are thinking, and you are getting to certain kind of uncertainties and now the mind is also fairly sort of boiled, burning, and body also comes to the same situation. You feel uncomfortable, you lost your balance, and you want to do something, you want to call, you want to do something, you want to take that flower to someone. So you are being really, really agitated in a way. Kaikapi darata pavaddanti, and they are increasing. Chetasikapi darata pavaddanti, and the mentally also you are agitated. Kaikapi santapa pavaddanti, and internal burning, bodily burning happens. Chetasikapi santapa pavaddanti, the mental burning happens. You are getting frustrated, you are getting agitated. You get into various uncertainties, you start thinking this way, that way. So that means the mental proliferation happens now. Conceptual proliferation is now tormenting. Kaipapi parilaha pavaddanti. So that means various troubles, bodily troubles, fevers, etc. Now they are increasing. Chetasikapi parilaha pavaddanti. So kaya dukkhampi, cheto dukkhampi, patisangvedeti. So Buddha mentioned, as a result of that, now you are suffering bodily, and again you are suffering mentally. Mental fevers increase, and one experiences bodily and mental suffering. Now, actually Buddha repeats the same thing for the ear. For we need to understand now, the sutta explains for all six sense bases. The same situation repeats for all six sense bases. Suppose if we take another example with respect to ears. Suppose you have you want to meditate, but you are a person who is really fond of music, and while trying to concentrate your mind onto breathing or whatever it is, suppose a very old, your most loving song, somehow you heard, maybe through the radio or whatever it is you heard, and immediately you get attracted to that, your mind get inclined towards that, and you want even to hear it properly, and you may even sort of open your eyes, and you probably anxious about from which direction it is coming from, and who is the person, the other person who is also interested about your same favorite song, and now mind getting involved, and you lost your meditation basically. Now you are getting to thinking, and you get various past thoughts, past memories with respect to that particular song. Suppose that you are singing that song with someone, and you get all those past memories into the mind, and slowly you've been dragged to those past experiences, and you start thinking, you start living that past experience right now, and all those different say sensations are happening in the mind. And suppose that person who that with whom that you have sung the song, assume that he or she had a kind of an accident, and he is no more available, and you immediately recognize, oh my goodness, he passed away, he met with a tragic accident, whatever it is. Now you start crying, and you start really suffering, and you start thinking further and further. Your past memories are again tormenting you. So mental suffering is available, body suffering is available, because you didn't understand it is merely a sound. We couldn't stop at the level of sound. We get on to more and more kind of added likes and dislikes. We couldn't stop ourselves. We couldn't stop thinking. And ultimately, the whole proliferation torments us. The same thing can happen to the nose, through the nose. Suppose you say there are very interesting experiences, like say while you are traveling, probably you had a very pleasant odor, and probably you stop and you hang around there, and you recognize a particular person, and you fall in love with that person long time ago. Suppose now something has happened and you separated, and now you are already married with someone else. Suppose that same kind of a smell coming from some other place. So immediately the past memories may come to the mind, and you get those past memories and experiences. You start thinking, you start writing, you start calling, you start, say, writing emails, etc., etc. The same thing can initiate further and further thinking, conceptual proliferation. And you can't be in the present moment now. You are fully driven by past memories. You may recall all what has happened. Similarly, the tongue, similarly the body, and similarly the mind. So Buddha mentioned, when one does not know and see the I as it actually is, does not know and see the ear as it actually is, when one does not know and see the nose as it actually is, when one does not know and see the tongue as it actually is, when one does not know and see the body as it actually is, and when one does not know and see the mind as it actually is, one experiences bodily and mental suffering. Now this is the negative part of this sutta, negative part in the sense where the knowledge is not available, where the person does not understand the full operation. So he is completely ignorant, completely unmindful, and he is driven by various sense gratifications, and the various sense stimuli can quickly stimulate him, and he may get into impulsive reactions, get into various thinking, or obsessive thinking, overthinking, etc., etc. And basically suffering is available. So he can't handle the six sense basis in a way. He don't know any kind of a restraint in the six sense basis. Whenever various inputs are coming through six sense basis, he can't manage them. So six sense basis are taking him as a kind of a drive, and very much he's like a slave. Whenever through the eye something happens, so immediately he is driven by that. Whenever through ears something happens, he is driven by that. So very much like he is getting tormented through the sense basis. He is suffering through the body and suffering through the mind. So this is the first part explained in this sutta, and I like to stop here, and we can discuss the positive side when one is mindful and developing the spiritual faculties, what one would going to experience, and we'll discuss that in the future. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Participants joining us for the first time, you can participate in the Q&A by raising your hand and or sending your questions through chat.
Yeah, we have a question here. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Bhante, thank you for this is wonderful, showing how one thing that wasn't brought up was, in a sense it's brought up, but the fact that we cling to the aggregates, and due to a sense of self, we identify our past memories of feelings and sensations, and then we're actually creating a sense of self, and that's why we attach, and we've made the mistake of thinking that these forms and sounds, smells are who we are by clinging to them and putting a sense of I attachment to them. And so that was just one thing that I was getting from these teachings, is this sense of I that develops. But then also I had heard that, and I was wondering your impression of this, or how you understand consciousness. The what I remember about how consciousness, the significance of consciousness, is that it gives a sense of continuity to our experience, mm-hmm. so that we that creates a sense of self.
Self, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you expand on what the significance of consciousness and how it functions as far as creating ignorance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, so one important activity of consciousness is this division. You are capable of distinctly understand various things. You can distinguish between two things. This is good, this is bad, this is auspicious and this is bad, or this is long, this is short. So all these distinctions are made by the consciousness, and you can distinctly recognize, you can distinguish. So this distinguishing ability is due to consciousness. So that is one thing. So when it happens, and then it divides, okay, this is here I am and there you are. So now two persons are there. So I am the one seeing and you are the ones whom that I am seeing. So two persons are there. So that distinction makes a sense of separation. Mm-hmm. So I am here and you are there, and I am internal, you are external, and I am good and you are bad. So likewise, now I can, when that distinction happens, I can quickly attach different labels to that distinction. Okay, mm-hmm. I have kind of perceptions about you, past memories about you, and how I dealt with you, and all these things I can include to the picture. I can quickly attach different labels, different perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So now I am preparing a more fabricated story. not only a kind of a story, kind of a fabrication I am preparing. I mean, assume that if we simply see, just seeing only, then you are not getting into all these different kinds of fabrications, decorations in a way, preparations. But when we do, the moment that we start distinguishing you as a separate person, I as another person, and attributing a person into the situation, and now attaching all those different perceptions I already have about you into the picture, so then, I mean, it's very complex. I mean, we get in a very complex kind of a situation. Now, mind has a rich area to think. I can think about your past, I can think about your future, I can think about your present way you are behaving. I can think about my past, my present situation, my future situation, maybe my education, your education, your nationality, my religion, your religion. So many different possibilities are there for me to think. So basically, I mean, so this conceptual proliferation happens when we distinguish, and as you correctly mentioned, when we have a sense of I, a person, and then it is being more promoted. So that's why Buddha mentioned in the sutta that we are discussing on Thursday, that Tuataka Sutta, Asmiti, Mantang Asmiti Sabbang Uparunde. So this Asmi means the sense of I am, the sense of I. So when the cognition separates two persons, so here I and there are you, so this sense of I is generated. Now it is the root of this whole conceptual proliferation. So as you mentioned, so whenever a person is created, whenever I is created, so then we can easily think with respect to this I, with respect to that you. So if it is possible, if we can stop merely at seeing, then we can stop thinking. We can understand, okay, there is nothing so-called I here, there is no so-called you, but I mean, conventionally we are giving those names, okay, I have my name, you have your name. So likewise, some different conventional realities are there, conventional norms are there, we can accept them, we can honor them, but it doesn't mean we need to get trapped in them. We need to understand, okay, they are merely convenient tools we are using to communicate, convenient tools that we are using to the well-being of the society. So I'm a monk, you are a monk, so I'm a senior, you are a junior. So likewise, I mean, something is there just to continue as a kind of a well-being of the monastery, well-being of the society, and all these different things, so that we can function smoothly. But we need to be careful that not to take them as the reality. So they are for the sake of that smooth function of the monastery, function of the Sangha order, function of the society. That's all. We don't need to take them so strongly, thinking that they are internally available.
Yes.
So now if I ask, so where is my seniority? You can't locate it, you can't find a place. I mean, it is just a convention.
Yeah.
Say I'm a senior monk, you are a junior monk. So if I'm telling like that, so where can I recognize that? So it is simply a kind of a perception, kind of a convention,
yeah,
based on the whatever the years or whatever it is. So those are all conventions. We don't need to get trapped in them. So if I get trapped in them, then I have a kind of a superiority mentality in myself, and I get conceited. I look down you, I don't consider your words, I don't respect your ideas. So all these things can happen when I am strongly adhere to those conventions. But if I only know, okay, these are some convenient mechanisms, convenient conventions, then I can keep only to that limit. I know they are limit. I am not getting too much driven by them, I'm not attached to them. But I know, okay, this is just for the smooth functioning of the monastery, smooth functioning of the Sangha order. That's it. That's all.
You mentioned conceptual proliferation. That's a part of consciousness. Is it?
We can say, other sense bases, we can say ignites that process.
Okay.
They are triggering the process.
Okay.
So the I forms an I consciousness, and that process ignites this conceptual proliferating process. Primarily happens in the mind, and when ear sounds, ear consciousness, and that process also can initiate that conceptual proliferation process happens in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then the nose odor similarly, and tongue taste also, body tactile sensations also. So when that particular process being initiated, if I don't properly understand that process, if I can't understand the I can't restrain myself only to the level of recognition, then I start thinking what is being touched, what is and how it has happened, and all different things, different many different ways.
Okay.
So all these sense bases are in a way kind of a stimuli for the development of the conceptual proliferation, to the initiation of the conceptual proliferation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Six sense bases are in a way different channels through which we are promoting conceptual proliferation.
Mm.
So our side questions are over. Jennifer, do you have anything, any conceptual proliferation in USA?
I'm sure there's plenty. Any questions from the participants, though?
So our good student Chitra Devi, hope you are not sleeping. Okay, I think there are no questions. Probably since we simply started the session and we simply discussed something that you all are fairly familiar with. And this sutta has some relations with the Madhupindika Sutta. Yeah, Madhupindika Sutta also explains how conceptual proliferation starts and ultimately torments the person who started that. So here the tormenting part is explained in the sutta. in the Madhupindika Sutta, only the term, okay, that you being overwhelmed by that conceptual proliferation is mentioned, but here some more details are explained by the Buddha. There he mentioned the mental troubles increase, bodily troubles increase, mental torments increase, bodily torments increase, mental and bodily fevers increase, and then bodily and mental suffering happens. So likewise, some more gravity is given to the results. So Buddha is trying to emphasize how one is suffering. I mean, even though these processes are happening in a way, a more subtle way, but it can generate very high amount of suffering in our mind. It may start as a very diluted kind of a process, very primary type of process, but it has the potential to overwhelm the mind. It has the potential to torment the mind. So that is the point, and that's why, I mean, if one is practicing mindfulness, so you start applying some breaks to the situation. So when you see something, you are not immediately jumping to a conclusion, immediately jumping to conceptual proliferation. You have some sort of a detached observation. You are capable of doing some sort of a detached observation. And even when you hear something, you are not immediately impulsively react. Rather, you can look back about the situation. You can step back and see the situation. So likewise, mindfulness and other, say, meditation practices are helping us to sort of detach from this the habitual process. Now all these things are very much habituated to the mind. So mind being fairly programmed to operate in this way. So that is how we have operated for many, many years, and from our childhood, and maybe coming from past lives. So that is how the mind being conditioned to operate. So these are the mental patterns sort of triggered. So they are very much already programmed. Now, when we are developing vipassana, mindfulness, so there we get a chance to look at how these are happening. So we have some sort of a skill now being developed that you can monitor, you can observe how mind has all these likes and dislikes. How mind being conditioned to operate in a particular manner, particular pattern. So if you are capable of understanding those patterns, then we don't need to further strengthen that particular pattern. So those traits available in the mind, we can sort of understand, and if it is harmful, we can stop that particular trait. So likewise, it's a kind of a self-correction process. So we ourselves have to do that. No one else can do it. So we have to develop the necessary qualities, necessary skills. And once those skills are being developed, now we have to start observing how this mind is operating and how mind been conditioned. What are the programs already inculcated in the mind? So already sort of ingrained in the mind. So when we understand that, okay, now we need to go through a kind of a de-learning process or rewriting a process which is more harmless and more beneficial and giving us ability to liberate ourselves, not being conditioned by so much of all these different already available conditions. So likewise, the kind of a reversing process that we need to start so that mind remains non-grasping, mind remains unattached. In the future, suppose now when you see something, say mind is not getting to the conceptual proliferation. When you hear something, mind is not getting to the conceptual proliferation. Rather, it can simply stop only at the mere, say, recognition. Say you saw someone and you recognize, okay, he is so and so. But that's all. I mean, mind doesn't need to think further about it. And you recognize, that's it. And your mind remains calm. The calmness of the mind is not disturbed. That's why, I mean, in the famous this Bahya Sutta, Ditte ditta mattam bhavissati, Sutte sutta mattam bhavissati, Mute mutta mattam bhavissati, Vinyate vinyata mattam bhavissati. Even though you see and you are not disturbed, you see, it is not that you are blind. Not being blinded, rather you can see, you can recognize. But mind remains calm. Similarly, you can hear, but mind remains calm. Mind does not start a thinking process. It can stop merely at the recognition process. That's all. And you again retain the clarity of the mind, retain the, say, calmness of the mind, uninvolved nature of the mind. Non-grasping state of the mind can be retained, can be protected. So that would be the training. So that is the training that Buddha recommends to Bahia, and it is not only to Bahia, to all of us. So when we are developing to some extent through vipassana, we have to reach this state, and once we reach this state, so we need to take care, okay, how now I am safeguarding my sense operations. So whenever I see something, how can I avoid any kind of stimulation of this thinking process, conceptual proliferation process. So as much as possible, I have to calm down, relax this conceptual proliferation, minimize conceptual proliferation, and if possible, completely cancel conceptual proliferation. Maybe a few thoughts can happen, but I am not dragging on to that. Yeah. So if there are no more questions, Jennifer, then we can wind up the session. We have spent 1 hour.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And we are doing, on tomorrow also, there's another English Dhamma discussion. That is on Tuataka Sutta. And that is on a separate line, separate Zoom link. That is the discussion actually we were doing, actually Bhante Dhammajiva was conducting on Tuesdays at 8:30. During his absence, we are doing it on 7:30 on every Thursday. Okay, with that news, I like to... Okay, there is one person. Yeah, Niranja. Okay, now two hands are raising up. Yes.
Bhante, the tomorrow session is we are having in the same Zoom link, Bhante.
Ah, this Zoom link, no?
Same.
I see.
Zoom link and the same username and ID and passport.
Bhante. I see. Correct. Yes. Thank you.
I just want to remind that.
Yes. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
Yes, that is true.
Okay, what time again is the program tomorrow?
7:30 a.m. 7:30 a.m. Sri Lanka time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And
then Chita Devi, you have a question? You may
have it. Yes, actually, I was going to ask you that same question about the line, but it has been answered. But now that I'm talking to you, you know, you gave this explanation about developing vipassana and being able to prevent mental proliferation. Now, that is for people who are meditating and doing vipassana and all. I mean, it's a little bit easier. But I'm talking about the younger generation now, you know, to give advice to our children even. I mean, they don't do vipassana meditation and all, but they, so how can we give them some basic guidance to be able to handle situations when it, you know, when you have this kind of thing coming through the sixth sense space or something very basic, you know, for us it's a different thing.
Yeah.
For people who meditate, you know, but younger generations, they do their meditation in a different way and they don't do vipassana and they can't sit for long periods of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice do you give them, Bhante?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, various techniques are there as we discussed in the Vitakka Santana Sutta. So I mean, when thinking has started, because you can't stop in between, you are not, your mindfulness is weak and you are not much trained, so as a result of that the thinking continues in one direction, it continues in another direction, it continues, and various different kinds of unwholesome thoughts are promoted. So this is the situation typically happens. So when it is happening, another way of solutions are given. Say if it is happening onto the anger side, then probably you can replace that with the loving kindness side. So that is where the metta meditation, loving kindness meditations are available. Because if the mind is getting into anger side, more into the hate side, then you have to promote the opposite side. So that is one approach. The other thing is that you can say when that process is given, sort of happening in the mind, probably you can establish mindfulness, you can bring your attention to your body, you can recall that you are where you are, rather than being driven by those thoughts. Probably you can step back and recognize, okay, I am sitting here, I'm just talking, okay, I'm eating, I don't need to think. What I am doing right now. It is very much like earthing yourself, rather than allowing that vicious cycle of thinking to continue. You time to time break that cycle by earthing yourself. Again and again, you are earthing yourself. You are cutting that vicious cycle. So that is also another mechanism that we can use. On the other hand, you can recognize the source if possible. You can step back and see how this thinking has started, where it has been stimulated through any kind of a word, any kind of a memory, any kind of a thought, maybe any kind of a vision or kind of a image happened to your eye, any kind of a sound happened to the ears. So likewise, you can do a little bit of analysis going back to the source. So that is actually another method Buddha recommends. So likewise, I mean, when the process has initiated, so there may be various other methods available to at least minimize that suffering, and ultimately, if possible, completely to stop that thinking. And not only that, I mean, say if you are developing some kind of body related activities like body scan, rising and falling, doing some little walking, going to the outside, and you got to do it depending on the situation. Say if you start thinking of someone who is really did something bad to you, and you start thinking about it and you start worrying about it, probably you can simply divert your attention to a complete different thing. You can start thinking about another person who really helped you, who really love you, and you feel happy about him, completely shifting your attention to something else. So likewise, many different techniques may be available.
Yes, Bhante, but these young people, you know, they have short fuses, Bhante, and even their, you know, if their basic comforts are a bit affected, they want to get angry. So it's very difficult to give advice to them, you know.
Yes. So that's why, I mean, probably we can prepare a kind of a video game to calm down them instead of agitate them. So now, I mean, some interesting ways some schools have started. Now, you know, there's one trend is called peace button. So this is available in UK. So for the junior schools, they have introduced with a song a little technique called peace button. So you are keeping your two hands on your tummy, and whenever you get agitated, whenever you get angry, so the advice is given to keep your attention to the peace button. So that peace button get up and down or on and off very quickly when you are angry or when you are agitated. But later, since your attention is now completely diverted to this peace button, to your tummy, and then you forget to promote thinking. It's a kind of a strategy.
Shifting attention.
Now you are shifting your attention to some bodily activity, and you forget promoting that thinking cycle. And as a result of that, slowly that peace button start calming down, and your agitation reduces, and the bodily process, say rising and falling, to also become more and more smooth. So ultimately you calm down. So children are telling, actually, when I am getting agitated, if I am getting sort of frustrated, I am now keeping this peace button, my attention to the peace button, and it helps. And not only that, and they have prepared some beautiful song also to that that technique. And as a group, as a class, they sing while they are doing it. They sing. Now, suppose when this type of singing, some enjoyment is attached to that. Now, at home, suppose a child get agitated, a child get angry. Suppose now he's able to shift his attention to that peace button. Now, when he start doing that, immediately probably he can remember that song also. Now, when he recalls that song, additionally what happens is it may generate kind of a joy, kind of a happiness in the mind. So happiness and ill will can't be together. So if the happy, enjoyable song you start remembering, then actually it replaces the previous anger available in the mind. So likewise, I mean, we need to be more creative. How when we are teaching to the children, so what are the various techniques available to overcome anger, to overcome this kind of agitation, so worries, etc.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah.
But the older people are the ones that, you know, this you can say tell these young children, but then now as they get older, you know, it's not that easy.
All are in the same boat. Not the younger generation, not the old persons. There are no exceptions. All are in the same boat.
No, the young, younger generation, Bhante, you know, they have they're different. I mean, and they are old fashioned, so it's very difficult, you know.
Yes. So,
yeah, but anyway, yes. Just got to develop some techniques and try to implement them.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. Then we'll wind up the session. So, all the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the past relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai.